It's good to be back with you. We've had a good vacation. We had a trip to Arizona, and we really enjoyed that. I see the room is pretty well filled today. There's a lot of you that are winter visitors, and we hope that you'll plan on moving permanently to be with us here. And that invitation goes to everybody that's on the webcast, too. Welcome to our services, and please come join us. We'd love to have you live. And looking around the room, it's good to see Marie on her feet. She's had a long opportunity to have patience, and it looks like it's borne fruit. So welcome back. And I see Randy over here. He's about due for a haircut. And our trip, we were able to see our two daughters. The main object was to be there when our youngest one graduated from Northern Arizona University, and she now has a degree in media and does a lot of things in journalism media. And she's working temporarily at the television studio for taking care of the Northern Arizona newscasts. She works on their Today program doing some little shows for them, going out and doing these interviews and so forth. She's had a wonderful opportunity, and now with her husband graduating in May or June with his degree in engineering, we aren't sure where they'll move, but they've already made contact. I should rather say God made contact for them. Chelsea works as also a wait person in a fabulous microbrewery up in Flagstaff. There's, of all things, 7 microbreweries in Flagstaff. And she was waiting on a couple of gentlemen who were there to hike the canyon on a 10-day trip. One was a retired engineer from Boeing, and the other one is a publisher. And when they found out what Chelsea and Anthony's activities had been, they've already made sure that they have their business cards, they've been in contact, because they want them to move to Spokane. So that is an offing that may happen, who knows, but some things are quite unplanned sometimes. We saw our other daughter and our two granddaughters that are there. Our son wasn't. He has his family in Virginia. Between the two of them, our son has 2 boys and our daughter has 2 girls. I think many of you probably know that. But these 4 kids were all born boy, girl, within a 3-year span. So they're very energetic. And certainly our granddaughters are. The only way you can get quiet in the house is to put them in separate rooms. But we thoroughly enjoyed them, spent time with our families. And I really didn't get as much vacation in as I would like. I took 3 books with me to read. And I got 10 pages done in 2 of the books. And that's about as far as I went. I also took my Kindle. My wife's inherited that already, but once in a while she'll let me borrow it back. And there was a book in there I wanted to read. And so I made some headway in that. And that brings me to the sermon. The book is written by Charles Dickens, one of your favorite authors. I know you read him every other week. He's got a lot of books. And the book I was reading, or am reading, is Great Expectations. Now, has anybody in here we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and there must be someone in the next room. Well, that's almost 10% of you. So I can speak to those 10%, and you know what I'm talking about. It's in Dickens' Great Expectations. It begins with talking about a young boy nicknamed Pip. And Pip is kind of a lost wheel in his whole family, and has no way to have care, but his oldest daughter, or sister, brings him in and starts looking after him. And at the same time, as he is being looked after by his sister, who brings him up by hand. That's the one of the things you see in the book. She brings him up by hand. That kid must have had rosy cheeks all the time. I don't know which set of cheeks it was, but they were all rosy. Some of you got that. Now in this story, his sister becomes acquainted with Joe and they eventually get married. Joe's a blacksmith. Now in his work, he's very diligent and he's somewhat raised by hand too. The sister is the boss of the home. But he has a very willing heart, a very noble man, and while he's not well educated, and decides then to marry the sister, he says to her, "Now when we get married, I want Pip to move in with us. I want to take care of Pip. Let's start with him being part of our family." And so he treats Pip just like a son. They become very well acquainted. And they have a very strong union, this six-year-old and this grown man. And so, as it were, basically, he was adopted into the family. Now, I ask you, do you know anyone who was adopted and treated like a child of natural birth of a family who might have come from indigent backgrounds? Do you know of anyone that was adopted and treated like a birth child? I have an elderly gentleman friend in Colorado. I grew up with his children. He had three sons and a daughter. And every so often I hear from some of them. But the elderly gentleman, once I got to know him and hunted with him a few times and got very close to him in all those years, he explained that he had been adopted. He didn't talk about it much. But there was this time in life when his background was very difficult. And his natural parents treated him with abuse. It was not a pretty picture. And he was put out for adoption. And when he was adopted then, the family he came to really loved him and took good care of him. Taught him many things and he inherited their farm. And he had a very lovely lifestyle after that. And so now, though in his 80s, he has a remarkable memory of what it was to be cast out and to be brought in. This gentleman that I speak of, really when you start talking to him, it's his discussion about relationships. And I want to take a close look at the first commandment with you today and as it applies to relationships. Now, you might not think of the first commandment as one that has to do with relationships, but indeed, it is important to our whole concept of living God's way. Now, in this room, most of us have become thoroughly acquainted with the Sabbath. And we'll run up the flag that we're a Sabbath keeper or that we don't curse or that we don't lie. But when it comes to the very first commandment, most all of us have some opportunity to grow. And I give to you that if you haven't found the foundation in the first one, some of what you might be applying with the others could be in vain. In 2 Corinthians 6, verses 16 through 18, there is a very clear understanding from Paul's writings, 2 Corinthians 6, 16, that makes us understand that we do have a Father who has brought us into His family. The spokesman has been very clear about that. Now, when it goes through this, I'm starting with 16, and it starts in perhaps an unusual place for the discussion. But it says, "What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. And as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Having had the opportunity to work with many people in the Caribbean, this verse stands tall with many of varying religious backgrounds. Most of the island peoples see themselves as the temple of God. And so when you work with them and talk with them, whether they be of any particular religious background or not, you'll find some things that are very different from the Americans that visit the island. Generally, they do not have tattoos. Generally, they are very concerned about their cleanliness. Generally, they are very concerned about their appetites and the foods they eat. And they see that sometimes within their communities there are people that do not value their bodies as a temple of God. Because they say, well, why would God want writings on his skin? Why would God put certain things into his body that are harmful and be willing to expose themselves to very poor things as far as hygiene and nutrition? Why would God not wash himself and always be clean? And so while they might have small ways in which to keep clean or to eat properly, they do their best because they see themselves as the temple of God. Now in verse 17, going on a little bit further into the meat of the topic today, which is the first commandment, the first directive and instruction, it says, "Wherefore come out from among them and be you separate, says the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and then I'll receive you. If you do that, I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty." So to be part of the relationship with God, it is important we realize we leave the past behind. Now that is the message of that first commandment in Exodus 20, verse 2. When you look at the topic, there are many ways that you can look at the first commandment. But I find in my own personal life and in this examination, as I prepared the sermon on one commandment, I found growth that I needed to expose myself to. The first commandment, or the first instruction, the first directive as it is translated from commandment to, from Hebrew into English, would be the first directive. It shows that our Savior rescued us from a very miserable state and made us His children. Exodus 20, verse 1, and I'll go through the first three verses, says, "God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, which has brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me." Now that clear statement given to them sometimes gets lost in the history of the Exodus itself. It gets lost 1400 B.C., it's in that time frame that we view this, and it gets captured by that time frame. They were rescued from Egypt. And we too have been rescued from Egypt. And now we're beholden to God to honor Him and to put the polytheistic attitudes of our day and age behind us, not to worship other gods and worship other ways. We find in our spiritual and baptismal education that we turn from sin and turn to God. And so we find ourselves now when we work towards baptism, we do not touch unclean thoughts or polluted ways. Now the phrase, "your God," that is coming into those verses, is singular. It is not collective. And it says certain things to us in the Bible. Sometimes we view it in a larger expanse. But it says I am the Lord your God. Very singular. Don't think of it as something that applies to everyone in the congregation. It applies in the individual way, but very particularly it applies to you in a singular way. Now, there are times in life when people bring things together. I think there are some snacks to eat next door. And we can go over there and eat them and enjoy them. They're for all of us. They're your snacks. But they're not just my snacks. And I hope you can see that difference. So the phrase, your God is singular, it is a statement for you to look at personally. Now individually then, we need to recall in our subject of coming out of sin that we were done this favor, brought out of Egypt, and again in a very personal way. And while you can give yourself the permission to apply it in a wider sense, please don't. See the bringing out of you out of sin in a very personal way. That the satanic system around you has been something that you've been delivered from and you now have freedom. You're free from the bonds of slavery to the depreciating system of Satan. In all of our comings and goings, sometimes we lose that priority that we should be very concerned about our personal perspectives and what is most important to us. Let me tell you the story about the parrot that could speak. It was in the pet shop. The lonely lady saw it and wanted that parrot. So she went in and bought the talking parrot. She went into the store and brought it home, put it in the cage. She wanted a companion, someone to talk to. Parrot wouldn't speak. So she went back to the pet store the next day complaining, "He won't talk." And the store manager said, "Well, does he have a mirror in the cage?" You know, sometimes they like to look at themselves and talk to themselves. She says, "No." So he says, here's a mirror, $3.50. And so she bought the mirror and took it home, hung it in the cage. Parrot still didn't talk. So she went back the second day to the store and says, in her complaining tone, "The bird is still not talking." And so the shopkeeper, the manager says, "Well, how about a ladder?" And so she spent more money and bought the ladder so the parrot could go up and down. And this was to make him speak. He didn't. The ladder was installed. He didn't speak. So the third time she goes back complaining. "He didn't speak. I bought a mirror from you and I bought a ladder. He still won't do anything." Well, the shopkeeper says, "Well, I think what you need is a swing." So she bought the bird swing, hung it in the cage, and no talking. The bird had everything it needed, a mirror, a ladder, a swing, wouldn't talk. And so she went back and complained. And after she had reluctantly bought all these things, she then came back the very next day and with a look of sour loneliness and a very sad face, she says, "The parrot died." And the shopkeeper said, "Well, I'm sorry. Please tell me, did he say anything before he died?" And the woman replied, "Well, yes. In a very weak voice, he asked me, 'Do they sell any food at the pet store?'" Priorities. It isn't in swings and ladders and mirrors. It's in food. And you have to remember as you go through this commandment number one that you have your priorities straight. this illustration, and hopefully you can remember nothing else about the sermon, the joke about the parrot. These are very important times. Bill Bennett said in a speech in which it was said he inaugurated Dan Quayle for vice president, quote, "It's not politically correct to believe in family values." Sorry, it is now politically correct to believe in family values. But it is not politically correct to get specific about them. Priorities. So you talk about something out of here in mumbo jumbo, but you don't get specific. And so it is sometimes with our relationship with God. This first commandment says, "I am the Lord your God." This first commandment, this directive, is very specific about family values. So I ask you, what value do you place on being part of God's family? What value do you place on being part of God's family? The first commandment is not just about what will be good for us in tough times. It's about how serious we are about the relationship with Him. And I again reiterate, if you don't have a relationship with Him as you should, then not cussing and not lying is not going to get you very far. You have to put them all together, but it starts with the priority that He is your God. Now, I want to take those three verses apart, phrase by phrase, and make some comment that I should think you'll understand. In verse 1 it says, "And God spoke." Who spoke? God. These are not the words of man. These are not the words of Moses. These aren't the edits from certain other men. The 17 verses, though short they are, all the Ten Commandments, that's what God wants us to understand as His words. And then it says, all these words. These words are complete. You don't need to add to them. You can't detract from them. That is all you need. And then in 2 it says, "I am the Lord." Now that word Lord comes from the Hebrew word Yahweh, translated into modern English idiom Jehovah, which is then means the eternal. So the eternal, He says, "I am the Lord." Then He says, "Your God." Now God there is the word Elohim, the plurality of the God family. So the eternal, who is your God, who is part of this family. Now it is important for us to realize that when we're thinking about this first commandment. I don't think we often think about it talking about a spiritual family, a relationship between the Father and His Son, Jesus Christ. And it says, "I have brought you out." It tells us that you have not provided your own escape. It isn't something that you have done to walk out of the room where all the mess is and find a pristine, beautiful existence. He had to show you the way and bring you out. And that's one of the things that people sometimes miss when these baptismal conceptions. They don't realize that they haven't found the truth. The truth has found them. It is something that has been directed towards the individual. "I am the Lord which has brought you out." What has He brought you out of? Out of the land of Egypt. In other words, Egypt being a type of sin, you were in a sinful existence. Then it says, "out of the house of bondage." Now we know sin is bondage, and it binds you. It's a slavery. And we've been brought out of the house of slaves and forced labor. And if you think to those that come back into the ways of the society around us, though they be happy with that surrounding, then indeed they're laboring after some very false ways. So then in verse 3 it says, you shall have no. And that's absolute. If you want a relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ the Son, and that is only for you, not for your friends, not for your spouses, for you, then you must be absolute in that. Now over here, I see Dusty, who brings us honey. And we took a little bit of honey to the other congregation in St. Pete today and made a little delivery for him. It started some time ago, I believe. But what did I take over there? Pure honey. Now, we've been in the company of my son, or son-in-law, who is a beekeeper as well. We found some honey at a restaurant, and it was real thin. And he says, well, I think they've added water to that. There are certain things you can do to honey to still consider it 100% pure according to government regulation. You can add corn syrup, you can add water, and increase your volume. But this volume is 100% pure. When it says no, it means no. It doesn't say once in a while. It says no. Other gods. Indeed, it's possible for us to have other gods. And that becomes a topic in itself. What are the other gods? And then he says, before me. Before his face and before his presence, whenever you're in the presence of God, and when are you not, you are to not have another God. This first directive initiates a close binding relationship between the Father and the Son. And this relationship with that family is a relationship you have been brought into if you understand this first commandment. And it is based on you being rescued from slavery to a false system. So there's a mantle of care that has been placed on you, and it is over and around us. And it obviously requires a natural loving and care mirrored to us, for we are the benefactors of that love and care. And so we then mirror it back. Now the Israelites had problems finding the kind of nutrition and food from God, given that they were coming out of slavery. And so their benefactor really had to be put to the test a few times. They were stumbling around. And so you can note in Exodus 14, verse 15, as a concept within that one verse, they were afraid the Pharaoh's armies were going to kill them. So they needed proof that God would stay with them. And then in short order, verses 3 and 4 of chapter 16, they said, we don't have any food. So he gave them manna. That's in 16, verses 3 and 4. Then in 16, verse 13, they said, we don't have meat. So he gave them quail. Then in 17:2, we don't have water. And he gave them water. These that had been brought out of slavery didn't have what it takes to live. And there's some symbolism in that for us. We do not have what it takes to live with our Father unless he supplies it to us. You cannot live on your own. Mr. Gennaro's 3 points work well with that thought. Now, in taking care of that, remember they asked and it was given to them. And it reminds us of Matthew 7, verses 7 through 11. 7, verses 7 through 11 of Matthew. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds. To him that knocks it shall be opened. What man of you is there whom if the son asks for bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks fish, you'll give him a serpent. And God does not give us rocks and snakes. Yet rocks and snakes are in our paths from time to time. So realize where they have come from. And ask for his help. Finally, in 11, if you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? And when we look back into these chapters in Exodus that I just mentioned to you in 14 through 17, they needed, and they needed desperately, and they needed in such a way that even their attitudes were cantankerous. But God saw to it that they were taken care of. He gave them manna. He gave them quail. He gave them water. Now let's make a parallel look at this. The imagery that we're looking at here is about our relationship with God the Father. Is there any other relationship where this commandment should have importance? Yes, it's in your family relationship. Your family relationship, whether up the ladder or down the ladder, should mirror this same concern, the same individual need to make sure that our relationships are solid. As you look at the systems today, and we consider our natural parents, do you always trust your natural parents? Have they taken good care of you? I speak to a congregation that is mostly grandparents. And when you think back, Grandma and Grandpa, to your parents, do they take a good look at you and really provide for you as well as they should have? And so you today, as you parent your children and your grandchildren, are you taking as much care for them as your father takes care for you? Many families today are dysfunctional. And I can't point the finger at anyone because I'll have to point it at all of us. We all have some dysfunction in our background. And we need to realize that and to know that that is what is wrong with the foundation of everything else that follows in the next 9 commands. If we will understand that, then we have some truth that's starting to yield itself to us. Sometimes we lack balance and balance has not been properly submitted to us. Sometimes the companionship within marriage has been destroyed. And we have single-parent homes. I don't see that mentioned in verse 1, 2, or 3 of Exodus 20. And yet we suffer with that. We suffer with divorce. We suffer with children born out of wedlock. And any children that need care need to look closely at where that care is coming from. Because the care goes beyond the immediate food in the stomach, the ride to the store. That disappears when you're 18. Believe me, it will go away. And where will you find the care then? Where will somebody look at you and try to take care of you? Sometimes we find in our midst, and in our society, abandonment. People just completely pushed out of the picture. Some children have been abandoned. Some children are rebellious, and abandonment is what comes about because the parent doesn't know how to guide the child. Some of us have had very poor examples to imitate. And we never looked at the first commandment to say, that's what I should imitate. No, we're imitating what was handed down to us. And that's what Pip went through. His sister, it is said in the book many times over, reared him by hand. Reared him by hand. And that's how many people today are reared. That is not worth imitating. And yet some of us imitate the best that we can recall, and we don't understand always that it is a poor example that we are following. So this commandment has its application in the sphere of our spiritual family and relationship with God, and also in our understanding of how our family relationships in the earthly way should be examples and followed. And unless you can do that, what good is it that you don't curse? Now, I'm not saying that you don't start cursing. I'm just trying to give a perspective. When you compare the Eternal's care for you to your care of your family or what care you were given, generally, you understand the need to grow. I know I sure did when I was looking at this topic over the last few weeks. I think the examination will show you and illustrate that most of us do not keep the first commandment properly. And there's a lot of things that have happened, and you've got to let that pass under the bridge and let it go. There's some things you can't get rid of, you can't change. The water's gone down the creek. But you pick up where you can and do the best from that point after. Sometimes we expect God to take care of us when we have an emergency. We may come to God when the chips are down. And that's when we want that family relationship. Same thing happens in earthly relationships of the family. When things aren't going right, that's when sometimes the kids come back. When they need money. When they need housing. If that's the case, your parenting is impoverished. That shouldn't happen. So really, we should not have a superstitious way of following this directive. It's got to be a habitual or a religious way that we follow it. As an example, I'll make some comparison to vitamins. When you take vitamins is when you're getting sick, right? That's when you take your B and your C, your D. I'm getting sick, I can feel something's going wrong. That's not the way that you do it. That's a superstitious way of taking vitamins. I'm getting sick, so I'm going to try to overcome it with this. No, you have to take the vitamins, if that's what you do, all the time. Or else you ruin the whole system. And so it is with God. He cares for us all the time. And you youngsters need to look at where you're being cared for all the time. You parents need to know they're looking for you to care for them all the time. And you parents need to take care of them all the time. But how you take care of them might be different from time to time, depending on their age and what their situation has become. If you understand that that is something you are committed to, you will realize that God caring for us as His people is really His covenant promise. For some time now, I've been harping on covenants. And so, in Exodus 6, the first 9 verses, that is covered. I'm going to pick up with verse 4. I've established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, where there were strangers. I have heard their groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians kept in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. So the children of Israel say, wherefore say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I'll rid you of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, which brings you out from under the burdens of Egypt. And so as he does that to the spiritual relationship within the church, do that in the physical relationship within your physical family. I'll bring you into the land, and concerning that I did swear to give it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'll give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. Now Moses spoke to the children of Israel and told them these things, but they listened not to Moses. They had a lot of anguish. They were in cruel bondage. But there was a heritage there. Now when I was younger, I used to hunt quite a bit. And that's part of my heritage. I learned about firearms from my father, who learned about them from his father. And in the fields and valleys and white expanses of Wyoming, it was just one of the things you did. And so I have a firearm or two. And part of the heritage of my son is that he'll receive all of them. He knows that. I think he's used every one of them except for Joy's gun. And someday they'll all be his. That's going to be part of his heritage in a physical sense. Some other things he's inherited that he's come by in the most inhumane way. Sometimes he's like me. And you can't get rid of what's in the genes. And some of your children have come by that too. They've come by it fairly. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it? So your children have a heritage that you will give them. Now in Exodus 15, 13 through 16, it talks about Israel was purchased. Exodus 15, 13. You and your mercy have led forth the people which you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength unto the holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestine. And all the people of that area are going to be scared. And then it says in 16, fear and dread will fall upon them. By the greatness of your arm, they shall be as still as a stone till the people pass over. O Lord, till the people pass over, which you have purchased. Now I think you must remember you were purchased by the blood of Jesus Christ. In a Passover time, we wax on that topic. You are not your own. And when you think about that purchasing, many of us realize it in the spiritual sense as applicable to this verse 2 of Exodus 20. That we recognize God and that we worship Him. And that we maintain then a very strong relationship with Him. Are we mirroring that in our physical family relationships? A strong relationship. Now, there are certain things you do in life to purchase each other. 42 years ago, dating Joy, having written her letters for 7 years, she's about ready to give me the heave-ho, thinking I just had her on the chain, on the line, because I wasn't asking the big question. But that was because I was waiting on Sam. I knew Sam and his family were diamond merchants, or are diamond merchants, in Antwerp. And I wrote to him and asked him about buying a diamond. I had $60. Wouldn't go very far. He said, I can get you some small stuff. So I said, well, let's talk about it. So I bought 3 small diamonds from him. And they came in a regular mailed envelope from over there, inside some notepaper, inside an envelope. Nothing special. Not insured. Open up this, and here's 3 small diamonds. It's in her ring today. Now, while I was waiting for those diamonds so I could finish the ring, and then everything could be said, will you? And she could say, I do. But I had to purchase the diamonds. And when I gave that ring, there's a lot that I've been paying for ever since. Now, you gentlemen know that. But also the wives know that. But you know, it works the other way too. Your wife has purchased you and everything that you stand for. She's putting up with that stuff. And sometimes it's pretty good stuff. As we go through life, we need to realize purchasing has taken place. Remember the bill you got for your first baby? Your second baby, your third child, fourth child. Anybody got more than 4? Ooh. You know a lot about doctor bills. Or maybe you had them at home. But you've purchased a lot when you gave money to someone to help you with that birth. Then you purchased new paint for a child's room. Green, pink, blue. You put up wallpaper. Your wife bought wallpaper for you to put up so it matched the linens in the baby crib. You purchase stuff. The kid goes to school. He needs new pants. What's the matter? Well, he needs new pants. He's going to school. New shoes. Who purchased all those things? Who purchased you? See, it works in tandem. What happens up there should be happening here. You and I know God has purchased us. And we have bought into the concept of the spiritual family with Him. And truly, we have bought into the concept of a physical family today. Or else we would not be families. So in conclusion, I have a question. Do your relationships today picture the relationship you have with God? Just that simple. The way that you behave on walking around on planet Earth is the way that you hit your knees and talk to the man. In Romans 8:14 through 17, it talks about the heirs that we have. Are you an heir? Or did you leave the ways of Egypt behind? Or do you cling to things that you should have left behind? Do you have heirs that you feed? And heirs that you comfort, just like Israel enjoyed. Just as you are comforted, do you comfort those in your family as well? Romans 8:14, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. And it's important to know and to use that word led, because that's how we've come out of Egypt and into the marvelous light. We didn't decide on it our own self. We were led that way. The only way that you escape the cubicle of Satan is that somebody hold open the walls and let you go through, took you by the hand and led you in the right direction. So it says you have not received the spirit of bondage again. You've escaped bondage. You've received the spirit of adoption, better rendered sonship. And that's why you say, Abba, Father, it's great, it's wonderful. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit. We are the children of God. And if children, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. Now all of us have stuff. My wife has stuff. She has a way of organizing it so the kids will get with all of her stuff. Her way is different than my way. You know, I give my son the guns, and everybody else can have everything else. Now, she has design. She's going to look after her heirs in a particular way. God is looking after you in a particular way. Are you looking after your heirs in a particular way? As an heir, have those that are going to provide for you looked after you properly? Your parents now deceased, whoever that may have been, those that could be with you today. And so let's finally look in Revelation 21, verses 6, 7, and 8. 21:6, where we talk about the children of God enjoying living water. And he said unto me, it is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of water, the water of life freely. Now, Israel had water provided to them, but there is this water of life, eternal life. He that overcomes shall inherit all things. My children are going to have all that they need and more. I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But outside, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the whoremongers, the sorcerers, all these idolaters that don't have a relationship with me, that stir around in their various activities, and that relationship I want with them is not there. They're going to have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. See, the choice is yours. What kind of relationship you have with God, that's yours to make. He's brought you to his bench. He's provided you the opportunity. He will be with you. Now, if you also look at your family today, your physical family, they can be looking after you or they can be abandoning you. How you work with your family today is very important. If you understand how to work with your family here on earth today, whatever station you find yourself in now, as it appears in this first commandment, if you know what to do today with what the future will yield to you, and you do that, good. Because I believe as we look at this commandment, what we do today with our families affects what will happen tomorrow with us in the family of God.